Today, the title of the session is called Gender Challenges, Confronting the Issues Women Face in Microfinance. We have Ms. Carmen Velasco, who's an independent consultant from Peru. Then we have Jacqueline Burfont, who's a senior associate at Women's World Banking for network engagements. She's from the U.S. Ms. Roshana Safar, managing director, Cash Foundation, Pakistan. And Ms. Shukenya Nidiaye Ba, President, International Network of Alternative Finance Institutions from Senegal. So I will turn it over to Ms. Carmen Velasco, who's going to be moderating the session.
Thank you, Sachu. Thank you. Well, it's a challenge to moderate a gender panel with this wonderful woman that they have a lot of experience. But could you play the first one? I think that one of the things that we have to be aware is that what is happening in the world. We have 7 billion inhabitants from which, of course, 50-50, more or less, are women and 50 are men. But if you begin to look to the data there, you really realize we have to be, a lot has been done, a lot has been achieved. There is a huge movement to have equal rights between men and women. But these numbers show clearly that there is much more to do. And here we are here for that, to see what can these institutions, these entities, and that how could they invite new people, new institutions to do things that will improve those numbers. One of the things that this information, I took them from a woman at the frontier, the next slide. And I think that this kind of initiatives are the ones that we need to push and to be bring them on board, because it's not only microfinance. It's what is every single institution in the world doing to improve the numbers that I just so showed. One of the realities that I don't know if we are aware is no other movement in the world, from in the history of the world, had achieved the number of women included as participants and as active participants of microfinance. What is the number of clients we have at the worldwide? And more than 60% of those clients of microfinance are women. So that becomes a market opportunity to end poverty. And if we don't take it, we'll be failing. What are the challenges that gender challenges women face in microfinance? They are overloaded with work. They have more work, more responsibilities, multiple roles, and very little support. So one could say you're damaging the rights of the women because you are overloading. They are overwhelmed with the work that they are doing. But then you go to them and you think about the trade-offs. And said, yes, she'll say, yes, I am overloaded. But I prefer to be overloaded than excluded. The same for the family, the same. The MFIs are committed to end poverty, are committed to make partnerships so they can improve their life conditions. So they are trade-offs. It's not easy to include women because they are overloaded. They are overwhelmed, but they prefer to live that life and not to be excluded. So in this panel, how can this challenge be faced? So they are going to help us to understand who should play this role, who is playing this role in facing the challenge, how, what needs to be done, and what's being done. Because I think a lot is being done, but how could we make it even with larger numbers, with larger inputs? How could we go even deeper in the poorest of the poor? How could we offer them services that really transcend what we have been doing now and really shows that they are improving their quality of life? So I invite this wonderful panel to share the ideas with us. They are going to, each one is going to do their presentation, and afterwards we can, it's more than question and answers. I would like a vivid discussion of your experience and asking them, how did they achieve? What is that what they are doing? And what's worth it replicating? And who could partner? Don't forget, the main point of this summit is getting partners that could help what you're doing go even farther. So everybody should and could partner with these institutions. I don't know the order. Roshana, please.
Mabuhay, I finally got the pronunciation right. I've been practicing it every day to get it right. Assalamu alaikum, sat sri akal, bonjour. Saludas, is that right? Good morning in Spanish. It's great to be here. I represent an organization called Kash Foundation from Pakistan. And I want to start with a personal story before I go into gender challenges that women in low-income communities face and how microfinance helps us to sort of dissipate some of those issues. I grew up in a household in a country where the patriarchy is the norm in a lot of ways. I grew up in a household where I didn't face any discrimination. There was no distinction between being a boy or a girl in my family. I had all the same opportunities that anybody anywhere else in the world would have, where development and incomes and disparity is less. So I wanted to give back to society. How could I do that? That was really what got me into microfinance. And I didn't come to microfinance. Microfinance came to me. I met Dr. Yunus at a chance meeting. He happened to be sitting next to me, and the eureka hit. That was the aha moment when I realized there was a way of changing the disparity and the inequity that women face by turning over the process to them. So that's what got me interested. The organization that I represent is a national program. We've helped about 2.2 million women set up businesses across the country. We have currently got a client base of 300,000 women who work with us. And what do we see? What are the simple indicators of change that we see? Over a period of time, mature clients tend to have higher incomes. They have greater control over their income because that's very important. It's not just about bringing income into the family. It's also important in decision-making and having control over them. And how does that control manifest itself into impact? We begin to see changes in the next generation. They're sending their children to school. They're feeding them better. They're making those choices that they couldn't make because that $1 didn't come in. So we begin to see the manifestation of that change in the next generation. So if we move to my first slide, and we can just click them all down, what are the various barriers that women face? So if you look at this diagram, when we started Kush, the first element of barriers that we looked at were financial. It was about access to services, whether it was credit, whether it was savings, whether it was insurance. So we looked at one of the sections of that diagram and said, okay, it's financial. Let's start with that. But we realized that the economic empowerment space for women is very complex. Like poverty, it has many, many layers. It's like an onion. You begin to peel it, and then you realize you have to do much more. So then we added the next tier, which was economic. What kind of businesses are women crowding into? How can we help them enhance the business networks that they have? The third thing we looked at then was gender concerns that they face, the socio-cultural milieu that they work in, whether it's the men who are supporting them or not supporting them, whether it's their mother-in-laws, because in our culture, I'm not sure if that's true in Philippines or other cultures, but the mother-in-law really has her say in low-income families. So how can we work on those barriers? And a lot of times it was also women saying nay to themselves. it was that lack of self-confidence, that lack of collective presence that they lack, no networks. So how could we break that barrier? And then, of course, there are legal, political barriers, women's right to vote, women's right to own property, women's right to have assets. All of those things are challenges that women face. So what we wanted to really do was, and if we move to my next slide, what does research show us? We wanted to really document this. So over the past 18 years, we've looked at some of the key challenges that women face as far as these barriers are concerned. So the first thing we saw was entrepreneurial capacity. Everyone has the potential to be an entrepreneur, but their levels. So what were the various gaps that prevented women from growing their businesses? Whether it was business management capacity, financial management, vocational training, products, service, and quality. And we discovered that many of these hypotheses were being held up to the test of time, that women didn't, they had the basic skills, but when it came to growing their business to the next year, they lacked that. Access to capital is a no-brainer, so we won't even go there. We all know that women lack access to resources, and Carmen has already talked about that. Access to markets, if we move to the next one, was another challenge. If women need to grow their businesses, even if they have access to capital, it's access to market that limits them, whether it's business networks, whether it's market outreach. A lot of times women limit their businesses to their communities. And then there was social barriers, whether it was the triple burden that Carmen already talked about, whether it was mobility restriction, whether it was women being repository of honors for men, so therefore they couldn't go out to work. So all of these things compounded. So what can microfinance do? How did we overcome this challenge? If we go to my last slide and look at that, that pyramid. The first thing we did was we made women invest their money in productive enterprises, and we focused on generating value out of that. That was step number one. We had to do that to give them the self-confidence that this. If they ran businesses, they could actually make them successful. The next was financial education. That was equally important for them to overcome many of the gaps that they face. We talked about markets. We talked about lack of access to knowing where to procure materials. We talked about entrepreneurial management and business management skills. So the next thing we did was, let's focus on their financial education. And then business incubation support, what is generally known as business development services. And that's where we started looking at market access and giving women information, because a lot of times they lack that information. They are unable to collect that information. And then within our own system, it was very important for us to listen to our client. So any products and services that we produce, it must have a women-centric sort of focus. So to do that within us, within our own program, we have various channels. We do customer satisfaction surveys. We do regular focus groups with our clients. We look at new products, new needs. For example, right now, we originally started very quickly, and then I'll stop because I'm going to see the pink card soon. We started very simply with a one-size-fits-all approach. But today we offer specialized, customized products. We run an individual lending program. It's no longer group lending programs. We don't do solidarity lending anymore. We work with an entrepreneur at a time, and every entrepreneur is unique. Some are better on the business management, while others are better on networking and marketing. So we modulate our support. Our business development officers are trained to advise the client according to their needs. Plus, we offer 5 or 6 different products. If you're running a small sari store, a grocery store, our product is different. If you're running a small hand embellishment, embroidery, handicraft business, our product is different. So we have 5 or 6 different products. If you're running a beauty parlor, for example, then our product is different. So what we learned over time is that to remain women-centric, you have to start by building up the tiers, and most importantly, not to forget to listen to your clients. So I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you, Rikana. Ms. Sukenya?
Thank you. Is it working? I'm sorry. I was introduced. I'm Sukenya Ba from Senegal. I lost my voice since yesterday, so I'm a little bit, I'm sorry about that. I should also speak French because it is my main language, but I don't see a lot of French-speaking people here, so I will try with my bad English. I don't want to repeat what said already my sisters. I think that gender challenges confronted by women in the microfinance sector is based on the fact that they are overloaded. As we know, for different reasons, cultural, legal, and for other barriers, women have different conflictual roles, actually, in countries like in Africa. They have to play their traditional roles as a manager of the family, of the children, the education. But at the same time, they have also to fulfill some other duties traditionally on men's shoulders. And I think the microfinance is not really taking into consideration these issues and proposing products adapted to the women. We design usually products for everybody, for women and men, and I think this is not suitable for women. For example, when I forget to start by saying that I am representing a global network with of microfinance institutions called INAFI International, but also I am working with a women's organization, microfinance institution, focusing mostly on supporting women in the informal sector. Why we decide to do so? It's because we saw that women was not accessing to finance, they was not accessing also to education, and at the same time they had a lot of needs to fulfill. So when we started, giving them a space. The space was to have some possibility to have an institution where they can come, discuss not only economic issues, but also any problem they can have in the house, because this is something they don't have. They don't have vacations. They work all the year. And at the end, men usually can say, okay, after 60 years, I can go for retreat. But women still continue working and supporting the family. So we decide to have a framework where we can call them for trainings. They can spend 5 days together with the other women. And this was a time for exchange to build some capacities for them and to build the confidence and to empower them. I think microfinance institutions should take into consideration this kind of facts, that they need some space to discuss between themselves and to set up their own agenda, if I can say something like that. What we did also is we try to empower women to discuss their own problems and to do their own lobby vis-a-vis of the government, vis-a-vis of other partners, to make sure that their problems are taken into consideration. So today we know that a lot of women are accessing to credit. They are doing savings, but less than men. They are still micro entrepreneurs, and they should go into big businesses, but they cannot because the problem is the lack of capacity. So non-financial services linked to microfinance institutions, to financial programs, are not anymore funded. And today, they just have short-term credits, 1 year, maximum 2 years, and they have at the same time to resolve the problem of the house, the family problem, and at the same time, to big women entrepreneurs. So these are, constraints and problems women are facing. And I can say that also, based on my experience, microfinance institutions target women because they have a good repayment back. But they are not considering women's problems, and they are not designing products adapted to these women's problems. So I think these are challenges we have to face. We need to make sure that education is part and capacity building is part of the product we are designing for women. So if we don't do that, we will miss a point. If you look at some numbers, we know that in Senegal, for example, women's savings are very, very small compared to men's savings. and they are those who are using mostly the infrastructure. So they have less than 30% of the savings, the global savings in the microfinance sector. They also, actually, they are, the number of women using microfinance is decreasing because the legal framework is also a new constraint they are facing, because we are mostly focusing on institutional capacities than on people's capacities. So what I want to say here to conclude is actually the legal framework push microfinance institutions to make sure that you will have 95%, for example, reimbursement back of the credit, but they don't take into consideration the problems groups like women can have. So this is a big challenge we have to face, and I hope we can continue the discussions later, because I see the pink paper. So sorry about that.
Thank you, Ms. Ukenya. Jacqueline?
Thank you. So for those of you that don't know, Women's Rural Banking is a network of 39 organizations around the world that are all focused on serving low-income women. And for the past 30 years or so, we have spent our time researching the needs of these women. What are their economic behaviors and needs, and how can we work with our partners around the world to help develop products and services that meet those life cycle needs? So today we're going to talk about barriers that women face. So I wanted to just touch on a few, some of which my co-panelists have already touched on. So very quickly, a few of them are one, literacy constraints. We know that women around the world are likely to be less literate than men, and we also know that they're less confident in many ways about asking questions in public, about demanding information, about products and services. So we really need to ensure that when we explain terms and conditions, we not only make sure that women are understanding it, but they're given the time and respect to make those decisions and come back to us. I also want to touch on mobility, which Roshani also mentioned. You know, in some cultural contexts, women are very constrained within their communities. They can't move around, they can't go to a bank branch, and may not feel comfortable doing so. In addition, those mobility constraints might be about the duties that Sukenya mentioned. They might have household duties or feel that they can't leave their business for an extended period of time. So we really need to make sure that those services are reaching the women and coming to them. Another area I wanted to touch on was the invisibility of women's contributions. We did some research in Colombia where we asked women how much of their income contributed to the household income. And on average, they said 10 to 20%. But when we actually did the calculations, the women's income was actually over 50 to 60% of the household income. Because they were earning in small amounts, maybe taking the milk from the livestock, it was a little bit each day, whereas the men were maybe bringing in the harvest and it was a lump sum. So it seemed like a much higher percentage of the household income. And this invisibility is not just to the community, but to the woman herself. So when we think about empowerment or we think about serving women, it's about raising the profile of her contributions in the community. And one last area I want to touch on, and it's a bit of a controversial one, is the control of assets. And Roshani also touched on this. You know, I think we've seen in many contexts that women are receiving loans and maybe passing along those loans to husbands or other family members and are not the one who are actually in the income-generating activity. And in some cases, this might be a good thing. Perhaps the woman has made a decision that the husband or son could be in a business that is a higher income generating business than she could be in. As Roshani also mentioned, there are a lot of barriers to entry for women in high income earning activities. But in some cases, this can be very disempowering because the woman is obligated to repay a loan in which she doesn't have control of the income to pay it. And so we really want to make sure that we understand these issues when we're developing services and that we're tracking this information and really understanding who is the end beneficiary of the services we're offering. So these are just a few examples of the types of challenges that women faced. I hope more of it will come out in the conversation. But I also just wanted to quickly, you'll see behind me, touch on an initiative that we're doing, because I think to really understand these challenges, we really need more data behind it. And I think we need data as an industry, but I also think individual institutions need to better understand their clients. And right now, we have so many touch points with our clients and so many opportunities to get this information. It's really about how can we aggregate it and really use it to make informed decisions. So just really quickly, you can see here that, you know, the types of indicators we're proposing, and these are really just a few of the many, are some of them are just gender disaggregated, really understanding your portfolio, understanding the types of clients you're serving, understanding, you know, the loan size, the depth of the poverty of your clients, both men and women, because they are very different in their needs and their activities. But also at the very bottom, you can see some social outcome indicators. So when we talk about having outcomes for women, or dare I say impact on women, I think we start to understand what that means. And for us, Women's Rural Banking, we've identified a few areas that really matter to women. Of course, there's economic improvement. You know, is she seeing a change in her household income or assets? But then there's also that self-determination. Is she in control of those assets? And finally, there's family well-being. Around the world, women are really concerned about the education of their children and their housing conditions. And both these things will contribute to the intergenerational poverty break that we're talking about. So I think how can we start to track data around this is really important, and use that to not only inform how we serve these women, but also, you know, how we as an industry talk about, you know, outreach to women and the fact that we're a women-focused industry. So I think I'll leave it there and turn it over to Carmen.
Thank you. Thank you for the three of you. You just shared something very interesting. But before passing the mic to the floor and having their participation and their questions, I would like to make a few questions to each of you, one question to each of you, and then provoke some questions from among you. That's something that you think that should be more clear, or you didn't understand, or you need more information. Roshana, one of the things that I would like to go more in detail, you began saying that you wanted to give society back in Pakistan for the luxury that you had to be born in a family that did respect, didn't have any gender issues, that all women, human beings have the same right. How do you think you could have achieved that? I know that you have explained the programs that you did and whatever, but do you track, do you have some kind of outcomes in terms of how many of the your clients are not repeating the vicious circle that includes women from being integrated or being inclusive? Included?
I think this is a very good question, Carmen. And the way, when we first started out, this also brings me back to my, you know, reflection. When we started Kush, we used to say microfinance for women, by women. So I never hired men in my organization. The idea was this is exclusively a women's issue. Gender problems or women challenges are women's problems, and we need to resolve them. And if we are to set up an organization, it must reflect women's values. And then in 2003, I realized that I was really not doing service to the cause of women, because men are equally part of this problem and we need to include them. So then the first thing I did was I started hiring men, which had its own pros and cons. So we let the men in. And then we started involving men in our program much more. So we started a gender training program where we started talking to the men. And it was very interesting when we ran these trainings, the men started saying, you know, why am I always the breadwinner? Why am I always expected to do this? Mm-hmm. I can't cry even in front of others, because then they'll say I'm a weakling. Mm-hmm. So that whole stereotyping of men is also quite a pressure point for them. So one of the things we started looking at was how one of the indicators we map now is what percentage of our loans are used directly by women. So that's part of our data management system. And we have a star performance ranking for every branch. And gender equity is one of the stars that the branches get. There are 5 stars they can get, sustainability being one, outreach being another, gender equity being third, transparency being fourth, and customer satisfaction being fifth. And we have ways of mapping all of them. Mm-hmm. So on the gender equity, we do two things. One is the gender equity in terms of the human resources in the branch. Mm-hmm. And the other is the gender equity on the use and control of the loans. So right now we have, in terms of direct usage of loans by women, of all the loans that we make out, 34% of them are used directly by women. Our goal is that by the end of December this year, it will go up to 50%. So this is a target we've given to all our branches. Mm-hmm. And then the remaining 50% that remains, of that only 15% is used in direct male-led businesses, and we monitor that. And those are usually businesses like rickshaws. I don't know if you're familiar with that. That's a transport system. The remaining of the 35% is all family-based businesses. So that's how we map gender participation and make sure that what we are saying, we actually test that, and it's visible and transparent. And then there are branches now that have achieved the 50%, so they get the star. So when you walk into a branch, the branch manager will say, I am a 3-star branch, or I'm a 2-star branch, what have you.
Roshana, you don't imagine how important is this what you just said, because I am, if I feel that I have something that I have to still work a lot, is that to have gender equality, to have gender inclusion, I think it's not working with women. It's making understand the whole society, what each one, men and women, play in order to be inclusive. It's not only women's problem. They are not excluded because they want. It's as far as we get the understanding of men and they feel part and not threatened, but part of the inclusion, this is going to happen. Thank you, Roshana. You mentioned something that it's also a burning question for me. We're overloading women. They did all what they did before, and now they are the breadwinners. And many, many times in Latin America, I don't know what's happening in Africa, but in Latin America, men, we've seen in a, especially in the poorest and the poor of the poor, that because they begin to earn some money, men decide not to give them more money because you're making money, I don't need to give you money. So everything is in their hands. But have you thought on ways how partnering with other institutions, how could that be solved? How could we face this? Because by complaining, we're not going to solve anything. What can be done? You know, it's a reality. It's a trade-off. Women have decided to do it, even though they know they're killing themselves. Because the other thing would be, don't get into business, don't begin your business, and starve and beg for the money of your partner. So what kind of activities do you think that it could be that we could develop in order that women feels more backed up in this work? What kind of partnership? This summit is about partnerships. How could we, your institution, your network, how could they help get more, achieve more in fairness to women, so they are overloaded? Who could help? What could help?
Thank you very much. It's a very difficult question because I think the problem is it's a cultural problem. And being a cultural problem is not easy to solve like that, because women are part of the problem, if I can say something like that, because they wanted to do that, to show to the society, to the community, and to the family that they are doing well. My feeling is that they think that they are they have some, how I don't know how to say it in English, they because they are working out of the house, they should prove to the family in law that they are still doing the right thing for the family. You see, so this is the big problem. This is the big challenge. How to face this is maybe to try to find new products, helping them have better health care, insurances, things like that. Because and also partner with people, as institutions, able to help them pay the schools of their children. You know, all this burden they are facing alone, to have some partners to help them solve the problem. Because if not, they will continue doing that, and they will continue to be overloaded. And when you see women dying after more and more after 50, 60 years. I think it's because a lot of pressure is on their head. So the health, the insurance, education of their children, all the problems they are facing alone, if they can have partners to help them do that, I think this will be very, very important for them. And also help them have bigger businesses also. Not only to still continue being micro entrepreneurs, but be able to be to target big markets. Mm-hmm. In Senegal, for example, we have the AGOA market open for us, but women are not using it mostly. Men and women are not using it enough, but mostly women are not using it because they don't have mm-hmm. the technical capacities to target a market like the U.S. market mm-hmm. in terms of the size of the market, but also what kind of regulation, the regulation. They don't have the information. A lot of things need to be done. Mm-hmm. So having good products, adapted products, could be the solution.
Thank you very much. And this brings me to talking about partnerships. I think that for a woman that's working so hard, the best partner is her partner. I have visited in Ecuador, a very, very poor area of Santa Elena in Ecuador, where women were killing themselves and they were earning very, very little money. And all of a sudden I saw like five or six that were really achieving better, that they were doing better. So I went and visited them. The five were working together with their partners. They had a family, a real family business. So I think one of our challenges is they are not alone. They have a partner, or they have a son, or they have a brother that they could. It's working with the support of the family. They are not alone. We are not alone. We have a network of support, and I think that is the first partnership that we should be tackling and working and promoting and empowering that kind of support. Men should feel proud of the business that their spouse is carrying, and I think that we should have to work. Then to you, Jacqueline, I know that Women's World Banking has been working endlessly to try to break the gender issue and to show that there has to be it has to be included. That what would you think? Do you think it's the largest achievement of Women's World Banking? Given because if someone has to give us like the light to follow is Women's World Banking. What would you say? What would you suggest?
Thank you, Carmen. Well, I don't think Women's World Banking can take credit for any of the achievements around gender. I think everyone in this room is contributing to that. But one unique angle which just popped into my mind when you asked that question was about building the business case for women. You know, I think a lot of gender issues get put into this bucket of this social outreach, and I think it's very important, and women are a vulnerable group, and they need to be thought of as in particular ways to make sure that the products and services we're creating meet their needs. But I also think that they are also viable customers, and they are strong, and they're businesswomen, and they are contributing to their economies, and I think we need to think about that when we make the case to not only microfinance institutions, but increasingly banks that are coming into this space. You know, you need to think about the fact that it seems universally thought that women are better repayers. The data we've collected so far supports that. It seems that women are more loyal to their institutions. The data we have supports that. And I think by continuing to make that case, which has always been really important for Women's World Banking, we can continue to advocate in a way that appeals not just to our social mission, but also to the business side of microfinance. And I think that's really important. And if I might make one other note to keep it conversational, because I think this theme about partnership and about partnership within the family, you saw that I had the indicator on control of the assets, and Roshane talked about the fact that 34%, I think it was, of cash clients were directly controlling the businesses they own. I think that's a very brave statement to make, and I don't think a lot of institutions are willing to talk about that. And I think getting real data over who the benefit or who the business is owned by is really interesting, because it might be that the partnership between a husband and wife is actually the best setup. And I don't think we should be afraid to really ask that question in an unbiased way to see who, you know, who is actually doing that, so we can actually tailor the products to meet those needs. So I think it brings it all together, and I think it's brave to say that, and more of us should be coming out and getting data around that to really make that kind of statement.
And feel proud about it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay, we had a question up here. Oh, sure. In El Salvador, in Central America, there's an experience of a community in the rural zone of about 1,200 families that formed an NGO 20 years ago. The NGO regulates other economic activities, but the biggest problem, the separation of the family because of the woman having money. Big problem. About 5 years ago, the NGO established that they were going to buy the coffee from the men with the condition that they would receive information or training based on gender. And that they can't say that there's equality. But at least one of every four men helps prepare the food, wash clothes, and helps the children with their homework. And that's supposed to increase. I don't know if in 10 years there will be equality. But if the woman is already making money and contributing, as well as the man, another similar experience, about 10 miles with another NGO, with the church, they had some issues because they prepared the women, gave them credit, the entire entrepreneurship theme. But they were dealing with the problem of the family being broken, because the woman earned more than the man. The NGO had to leave because they considered that the family was the most important than the money that the woman was making. That's because we need to be careful with the cultural issues, and that it's not an easy issue. This is just commentary. Commentary, because sometimes it seems that it's very easy and we forget that they're inside of a family, that they're part of a family. It's very important in the cultural context of it. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that discussion. It's really important. And when I look at the problem, I think what we are discussing here is overload. It is very true that women are overloaded, not only in microfinance, even in this room. It is becoming a big, big problem that needs global attention. I think there's need to draw the men to the drawing board, so that
there are men
in this room also. Yes. To go back to the drawing board to appreciate their responsibilities. Why the problem is going to be bigger than what we think is the young generation who have grown up in homes and have seen their mothers suffering, supporting homes, and when they get married, they think it's normal for the woman to suffer. And when you see the young ones, they are very lazy. Men are lazy now because of what is happening. So it is something that needs attention and needs to be addressed. Just like we have women organizations, we need to see men organizations to address the social and the natural need for them to understand their responsibilities. Also, what is really very important, I don't think microfinance alone is going to address the challenges of women because they are bigger than microfinance. Mm-hmm. And when microfinance came in, the problem is growing bigger and bigger. Instead of working harder than men, they're working less. Women are in markets struggling, but when you show the figures there, the gap is still so big. Who is eating our money? It's the men. Because what is happening today, as women, we are spending that invisibility of our income on tomatoes, onions, which just perish in a minute. And when he puts up a structure, it is so evident. Now the way I look at this, that self-pity and lack of confidence is not going to solve the problem. As women, we have to come out with a lot of confidence and no self-pity and develop a strategy for each individual woman to uphold a woman. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Those were a very strong
statement.
Thank you.
We have a man coming up. Is there anyone
can
else?
Can we, Sochi?
Yeah. Can we make a rule that 1 minute, 1 minute comments or questions? Yes?
Huh? Can we respond to what
sure,
you said?
Sure, go ahead.
I think we also thank you for the comments that both individuals made earlier. I think we have to look at evidence. And we have often been asked this question. So we went back and we did research. We wanted to see where women were earning was the labor supply of men changing in those households. And we have data for that over the past 18 years. And what we've discovered that in 50% of the households, there's no change. 50% of the men were working the same prior to women earning in those households. We saw 30% were working harder. What we saw, their number of days that they were spending and the number of hours that they were spending on productive work had actually increased. Because what was happening, they were doing a job in the morning and then they were helping the women with the business later. So their transactional time went up. So when we look at 80% of the men, their work had either stayed the same or their work had increased, or the time that they were spending in productive enterprise had increased. 20% was where the problem was, where they stopped working. So there will be households where we will see that with women's uptake of taking income, they will stop either, they'll start working less. So there is that problem, but it's not a major issue. That's what our research shows. So I think we have to ratify what we say by evidence. That's very important. Like Women's World Banking has done a lot of work on the evidence behind that. That's one. Number two, the issue that you raised on cultural contextualization of what we do. That's very important. I'll give you an example. In Pakistan, almost 80% of the country, we don't have any problem of accessing women. We go out there, we start. Microfinance has become a household word. It's not a problem. But in the northwestern part of the country that borders Afghanistan, it's very difficult to work there. So we spent a year doing research there to understand how could we draw the women under the aegis of the men saying it's okay, because we had to first get the ratification from the men and to enter those markets. And we discovered the best way to do that was to come up with an Islamic microfinance product. Mm-hmm. So now we offer Islamic microfinance products just because it makes the men feel fine. And they say, okay, that's fine. The women can do this because this is okay under the umbrella of the religion. So the first most important thing we have to do when we go into... And for example, I'll give you another personal example. When I go into those communities, I cover myself. I don't go there the way I'm dressed right now or as I would go in other parts of the country. Because you have to respect cultural norms. You can't just go in there and say, oh, this worked here, so I'm going to just prescriptively impose this on this culture. You really have to do research. You have to listen. You have to understand. And that takes time, effort, cost, sensitivity, and openness. So all of those things, you have to combine them.
You want to say something?
Jacqueline, did you want to respond?
I just have one quick note. And it's actually interesting about the point about that we women, or you know, really everyone, is overburdened, even in this room. And I think there's a note also on the staff of microfinance institutions, and when we talk about your women staff, and when we think about the fact that you have policies in place that could promote their leadership, because what we've seen is that in institutions where women are promoted and are retained and policies benefit them, whether it's a maternity leave policy or, you know, allowing them to have that work-life balance that maybe our clients can't afford to have just yet, then that is reflected in the way that we treat our clients. So I think it's a very real issue for the people in this room. It's a very real issue for our staffs. But it's not saying we should be 100% women staff. It's just saying we need to think about these issues at all levels of the organization.
Yeah, 50%.
At least 50% to represent the balance in the country. And then we like to say mirror your market. If you're serving predominantly women, then think about how your staff reflects that.
And not only at the staff level, Jacqueline, but at this, at the top manager.
Absolutely.
And that is changing rapidly. And I think that we have to have a say there, because a lot of men are stepping in the the managerial level of the organization, and we have to say something.
Absolutely. Thank you.
As you say, don't play the victim's role.
Next question.
All right. Well, as the man in the room, I want to applaud the fact that you're paying attention to the weaker sex. You know, this is an issue that is not just in the developing world. This is very important to say. This is, you know, in the United States right now, for the first time, there are more women in the workforce than men. The women are doing better across the board in universities. So once you begin to empower women, it does become a greater struggle for men. Now, also in the United States, there are more African-American young men in prison than in college. The women, African-American women, are doing quite well, but not so much the men. This is this really is an issue we have to address. Yes, maybe women are more likely to take care of their children, but as several people have said, the need to have a man who can feel that he can take care of his family is something we have to emphasize. We you don't want to let us off the hook because it will burden women too much. And then the second point I want to make is, for those of you working on women's issues, I work on the rights of people with disabilities, and women with disabilities are the poorest educated, have least opportunity for finance, and because they often can't find a spouse, there's no wealth transfer. So I have a lot of information on this. I urge you to take a look at this 15% of the global population and get women into some of the group lending programs. We're doing programs in Paraguay and India now, and people with disabilities make excellent clients. And the last point I want to make is, you know, the issue for women and girls is so difficult. I'm staying in a hotel where at 11 o'clock at night, you suddenly see, you know, men from the West bringing in young Filipina women. Right now, today, tonight, maybe 50, 60 are coming a night. So there's this issue of sex slavery. I mean, they may not be technically slaves, but this is just a terrible issue. And those women should be building businesses, not being the sex toys of Western men.
Thank you. Does anybody, panelists, want to respond to any of those? Good.
I mean, I think they're all excellent points. And I think, you know, when we think about how we track and understand, I think your point on disabled and disabled women in particular is very important. It's interesting because we've shied away from, you know, sometimes women are also put in that bucket, like, oh, subsegments, you look at disabled, you look at women, and, you know, we say, well, half of the disabled are women. It's just a breakdown. It's not a minority group. But I think your point about them being the most vulnerable is absolutely a point well taken. And just on your point on young males, I think it's not just a problem in the United States. As you said, it's everywhere. When we look at the Middle East and North Africa, and from a political standpoint, the repercussions are enormous for not paying attention to our young males.
Does anybody speak French? I can translate. No? Anybody? Right here? Oh, Corinne. Yes, of course. Can you please translate?
Okay. Merci. Moi, j'aimerais intervenir dans ce sens.
she would like to intervene in this sense.
C'est la Banque centrale du Congo. Je suis superviseur des institutions de microfinance.
She works at the Central Bank in Congo and she supervises microfinance institutions.
Je pense que le problème où les femmes font face aux microfinance, nous avons eu à mener une étude depuis 2010 jusqu'en 2012.
So the problem women face in microfinance, they had a study,
De 2010 à 2011, les femmes dans les institutions de microfinance, donnaient plus de crédit et épargnaient plus.
So from 2010 to 2011, women in microfinance institutions received more credit and were saving more.
Mais quand les femmes ont commencé à s'épanouir sur le plan financier.
But when the women were kind of being empowered from a financial point of view,
nous avons remarqué que le taux d'épargne et le taux de prêts octroyés aux femmes,
they saw that the rate of credit and going to women and of savings by women
avait sensiblement diminué jusqu'à 30%.
Was really being going down, going to even 30%.
Tout cela, nous l'avons remarqué et nous avons déduit ceci que les hommes essayaient d'empêcher les femmes à épargner.
So what they were seeing was that the men were trying to stop women from saving.
Et que les institutions de microfinance donnaient plus de prêts aux hommes par rapport aux femmes.
And that microfinance institutions were more and more giving loans to men rather than women.
Le travail que nous sommes en train de faire, ce sont des sensibilisations. C'est vrai que c'est un problème de culture.
So what they are trying to do is addressing it by awareness raising because it's a cultural problem.
Yeah, mais maintenant nous sommes en train de pouvoir donner de l'éducation financière, comment gérer
But
les finances.
It's really important to give financial training, financial education, how to manage their finance.
En même temps, essayer de montrer aux femmes que on peut bien travailler, on peut bien aller de l'avant, mais en même temps s'occuper aussi de leur foyer de manière à ne pas succomber aux baisses qu'il y a eu entre 2011 et 2012.
Showing to women that it is possible for them to save and to be financially active, transacting, without it having to have a negative impact on their families, so that there wouldn't be a backlash and for women to participation to go down again.
Moi, je pense que nous devons plus aller sur ce sens, donner de l'éducation financière et en même temps essayer d'accompagner les femmes en les aidant à pas aller sur ce problème de culture.
So merci. It's really important for us to provide financial education and work with the women so that we can overcome these cultural barriers.
Great. Could you?
Okay, can I add something about what she just said? I think we all notice in Africa globally that when we start the microfinance business, women was the biggest number of borrowers and savers, quite 80% in the 80s. But today we know that the number is decreasing. The savings are decreasing also, and there is a reason. The first reason, I think, is because they are having more and more financial responsibilities they did not have before. Because, I'm sorry, men are not taking their financial responsibilities. Because women are earning money, they say, okay, you have to pay for the kids. And even if they don't say it, I mean, when you have two or three wives, women take care of her children. She's going to pay for her own children. She's going, because for her, this is her insurance, her life insurance. When she will become old, she will have children who are going to take care of her. This is one reason. This is why I think that the savings are decreasing. Women's savings are decreasing. And this is a problem. This is a big problem we have to find a partnership agreement to really make sure that they are not going to continue like that. Because at the end, this will influence also the children, because I noticed in my own organization, we start like you did, as a women's organization. We said, okay, we want to empower women, we want to work with women alone. But finally we said, okay, this is not the right thing to do. We are in a society where men and women have to work together. So we need to see what will be the agreement between the two, how we can do the work together and be ourselves, no? So that's how we start having staff in the staff men, giving, and the women came and say, okay, we have our children. We want them to have jobs. We want them to access to credit. If you just give us credit, what are we going to do if they don't have employment? So we say this is also a reality. And we start introducing them. But we make sure that the women have the control of the system. Because what we noticed was that men usually take very big credits immediately. Women start very slowly and step by step. And if you look at the portfolio of a microfinance institution, you can have maybe 20% of women, but they only have 10% of the portfolio, when you will have less number of men, but the bigger number of money. So these are also things we have to train to them. But what I want to say to our sister from Central Bank, the Central Bank in Senegal, for example, the big fighting is they consider microfinance as a financial business. That's it. It's not a social and development tool. And this is a big problem we have. And women are suffering of this situation. And we need also to have a partnership with them, with government, but also with central banks to explain to them that microfinance is a tool for development, not only a financial, additional financial system. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I just add something from research? You know, I try to back things by evidence. We did, with Women's World Banking, an extensive research with 10,000 women almost over the years to design a savings product. And we ranked return, convenience, access, which means the ability to withdraw the account, and confidentiality as the four parameters of opening a savings account. And we asked women to rank them. And confidentiality was the second highest ranking. And when we asked them, what does that mean? Is it that you don't want your community women to know about your savings? And they said, no. My husband should not know that I'm saving. So yes, it is an issue. But again, I go back to the fact that use this information right. Design the products where you can allow, you can listen to women and then make sure that your products reflect those needs. So there are ways around this. I think this is the reality, but we can actually design products that can then address those concerns.
Great, thanks. If we can get the next question or comment, keep it to a minute just because we have a couple.
I actually have a question to the panel. I'm looking at the history of microfinance. It started very much women-focused. Well, there are all kinds of reasons why this, of course, there were changes because we were learning over time. And now there are some mentions being made like, well, you know, we see men coming in, but also taking over. I know Women's World Banking has been around for years to focus on this issue of gender, and we are also discussing it here now. But I'm just wondering, what are the other initiatives, programs, new things that are coming that are trying to, let's say, develop this thinking further?
Anybody want to respond to that?
I think what you're saying is absolutely true. And there are many, many efforts. If you see the universal standards that the Social Performance Task Force has been drawing for the last 5 years with a lot of participation and a lot of institutions being part of it, is drawing the best practices, the universal standards that will hopefully avoid this. Because what you said, it's not only true, but it's a real threat. And I have it's a very sensitive point. I think that while microfinance was like seen as a welfare activity, like for charity, well, women were allowed it, and it was a women's business or issue. As soon as they began to see big numbers in terms of
return and big institutions. No, this man with ties, they came in and they took over. And I'm sorry to say, but this is the case of Bolivia, this is the case of Peru, this is the case of Ecuador. So I think that we have to be very aware. And if you visit the universal standards that Social Performance Task Force is developing, you're going to see that a lot is being done in order to avoid that and to prepare the sector to be more reactive and to do things in order to avoid this. But you're absolutely right.
Just to add, I think we are forgetting technology. We keep talking about the overburdening of women. One of the things we do at Kush now, we have mobile transfers. So that saves the client the time to come to our branch. Or she can just deposit her money in the agent who is like not even, it's a few meters away from her house. So I think technology is one way of giving back the movement to women. And we need to do more on that. This is just the beginning. And we will see a tectonic shift happening over the next 5 to 10 years, I personally believe, where we will be able to offer products to women while they're cooking, literally. That's what we want to see. So they don't have to juggle all those various balls in the air. So,
and if I could just add one quick point, I think, you know, partnership is key. And I think that, you know, we're working with SBTF, with Smart Campaign. What does client protection mean for women? There are very different needs with the telecommunications companies. I mean, the opportunities are endless. But I think it's really interesting what you bring up about the numbers. And you are seeing this movement away from women. It's not as drastic as we think. As Carmen said, 60-plus percent of microfinance clients are still women. I've seen that number placed even over 70% worldwide. And I think, you know, women are still the core of our base. And it's not about how many women we serve. It's about serving them well. And I think we need to think about that. You know, we can see that number go up or down, but it's about, are you providing the right quality of services? Because I think that's a much more important question.
Okay. We have one up here. You're next, I promise.
Well, isn't it...
You're next. He's going first, sorry.
What did you say? I'm Dunandi Silva from Sri Lanka. I work for an agency called Berendina Microfinance Institute. Berendina is a lady. It's a Dutch lady who has created a trust. And her funds are being used by us. Now the problem I face is that, actually something that anyone can help with answer. The problem is we have 150 staff, 17 branches, and we have very good program with a very good track record. But because it is, partly because it is good, the men outnumber heavily. I mean, not because it's not good because it's men, but the resistance to change. Now, we don't have a single branch manager who's a lady. We have only about 10% of the microfinance officers, credit officers, ladies. But we have 70% women clients, and all the cluster leaders are women. And even my other directors, all the other managers are resistant to change because they think, oh, this is working well, right? Why rock the boat? Of course, in certain parts of the country, it's difficult for ladies to go in a motorbicycle, but that's only a few parts. But the eastern province and the dry zone, it's very easy. So how do I solve this? How do I get
can I answer that?
How do I get persuaded?
I have a standard of 50% on every... I have 50% business development officers, 50% branch managers, area managers, and as you go up the line. So this is affirmative action, this is succession planning, this is pipelining, this is recruitment, this is training. You just have to tell your HR this has to be done, and you have to maintain it. And no, but you have to, I think in certain things you have to have the will, and then you have to communicate it, and then you have to persist. For example, we went into the most conservative areas of the country, and I was told I'm not going to find women. Women don't work. It's not going to happen. I said, that's not true. The more than 60% of the college enrollment in this community is girls. Get them. Go there, recruit them, and bring them out. And convince their families that they should do this job, even if it's a community job, and even if they have to walk to the communities. So I think it's about pushing it, and pushing the agenda, pushing hard. It's a constant issue. I can tell you every day, I have two HR managers, a woman and a man. So every day I have to push them. Go out there, you get the women. Then, for example, we had problems at one stage. The 60% branch managers became men and 40% became women. So I said, no more promotion of men into branch managers. All business development officers who have potential, train them, do succession planning that are women, and bring them up. So the men started coming to me, and in my whistleblowing, we have a whistleblowing channel, I started getting all these emails. Kash, management is discriminating against men. They're not allowing them. So I went out there, and I did what we call town hall meetings with my staff. And I said, come on, tell me what the problem is. And so the men stood up, and they said, look, we are not being promoted. I said, this is only for 1 year, till I get 50% branch managers who are women. Once that's done, it's equal opportunity for everyone. So I think you just have to, you know, I say take the bull by its horn and just do it. And you will achieve it. I tell you, come back to me in a year and your numbers will be different.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same. Basically, I want to follow on what Roshana is saying. I think that the management of the MFIs in Africa and Latin America, where the most of the problem with too many men are in Africa and Latin America, right? Asia is still pretty much most of the programs I've heard in Asia. I could be wrong if there are some exceptions, but most of them still seem to be very substantially oriented around women. Borrowers are substantially women, even the staff. But in Latin America and Africa, I think probably because of cultural reasons, it's moved away from that. And, you know, I think the MFIs could actually just make a policy that we're not going to give loans to men. If it's a problem, don't give loans to men. Or if you have to give loans to men, make it harder for the men or something, you know. And then like Roshana said, it's hard to manage these kinds of organizations. If you are truly dedicated to having women be in positions, I just got through filling a retreat, and it's hard in a male-dominated field to get 50% of the people in the retreat that are women. But we got very close. You know, if I hadn't had one woman drop out at the end and one man come in at the very end, I would have had exactly 50% women. But it's just being totally dedicated to having women in the roles. And, you know, it's like almost a religion you have to have, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Can I add something? I think also there is something amazing because I think Gera was saying that when the microfinance business started, the woman was really, he was focusing on women. Because in Africa, for example, I take the case of Africa, we start with women's groups, solidarity groups, the tontines and things like that. Because women did not have access to finance elsewhere, they was putting their savings into a group and borrow, give the money to one of the members to start a business. But actually, if you look at the microfinance sector, you don't see any women. In Senegal, for example, I am the only one as a CEO. All the others are men. So what happened? That's a question people are not asking. And the donors also are not asking because they are promoting this kind of thing. Because most of the organization with a lot of money was funded somewhere by outside donors. Those who start by themselves, try to do by themselves, never receive any fund because they don't maybe fulfill the ideas, or they don't promote some ideas, or I don't know. That something is not correct for women, because this was our business, but actually we just lost it somewhere.
Jacqueline?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Just one note on, and I think a lot of responses we get when we ask, you know, why don't you have women in senior management? Why don't you have women at the ground field staff? And I think they say, well, we can't recruit. These women aren't coming forward and even applying for the jobs. It's not even a matter of hiring them. And it's finding them. We found out, we asked the question, well, how do you go about recruiting? We create these recruitment camps, and anyone in the community, we spread the word. And then one woman in the staff spoke up, and she said, well, I've sometimes heard that the women don't like to come to the recruitment camps because it's mixed between men and women, and the men are much pushier, and it's hard for us to get to the table, and so they don't like to come. And I was like, do separate recruitment camps. Do recruitment camps for women and one day for men so that the women feel comfortable coming forward. There are always ways. And even on the way the ads are written, sometimes if you look at the way an ad is written, the characteristics, it subconsciously has a message that they're looking for a man. Mm-hmm. You know, if they say strong versus, you know, capable. You know, just different words that you use unintentionally can convey messages that you might not even realize are being put out there. So, you know,
that's
it's just about
a man and a woman.
Exactly. You never know. So it's worth rethinking even how you go about getting those women to apply and then, of course, promoting and then the policies. I really think you have to have the policies in place to retain the women. You know, women are going to have children and they're going to have families and they're going to have to make that balance. And you can, at every level, have policies that do that. Women, if they don't want to travel to become a branch manager, do the branch manager trainings in the region so they don't have to travel as far. There are always ways. Yep. Mm-hmm.
They say that when there's there's a power.
Absolutely. Thank you all for your presentation. We definitely need more players like you in the sector. I represent Microcredit Enterprises. We're a funder of MFIs that focus on women in rural populations. And something that we struggle with as on the funder side is we definitely like to have MFIs that have majority women clients, but as we're moving into spaces such as the SME, we see that women are certainly being edged out. So with your clients who are graduating up and growing their businesses, I'd like to hear how you're able to help keep them included in the financial services in terms of what you can offer and what innovations are happening in the space.
What's SME?
Small and medium enterprises.
Small and medium enterprises.
Oh, okay.
Do you want to go first?
This is a very interesting question that you've raised. There's very little organic transition that happens. Our data tells us that only 3% of home-based businesses or self-employment businesses, which women run, grow into the small small enterprise level, or they become employers of others. Usually, a lot of the women that we work with employ their family. That's why almost 35% or 40% of our loans go towards family enterprises, as I was sharing earlier. So what did we do on that? We actually came up with the notion of business incubators. This is supported by the Canadian government. Again, it's a grant-led program. It means a lot of investment in women entrepreneurs. So this model actually works on three premises. The first is business entrepreneurship. How do you strengthen? Remember, I talked about all the gaps that women face. When we did research, we discovered one of the gaps was entrepreneurship per se and business management and business planning. So this is a four-month course that we offer. So first piece is related to the business management and entrepreneurship. Second is marketing and product design, because we discovered a lot of times they're doing the same thing that their neighbor is doing. So they're not able to grow their business. And marketing, they're selling in the community. Unless they go outside their community, their business is not going to grow. So that's the second piece. And the third piece is skill development. We discovered many of the skills they have are obsolete. So they're doing designing, or they're doing embroidery work, or they're making shoes, but they're all it's the same thing. So you need to get them access to skill training and skill development as well. It's skill enhancement more than skill development. So those are the three pieces. Now, of course, this is a lot of investment. So what the criteria we use are women who've been running their business successfully for 3 years and who are committed, who commit the time for that training. So in these 32 incubators that we have, on average, every cohort group comprises of about 100 participants. So every year we run 3 such trainings. So every incubator is able to produce 300 graduates from those incubators. In 5 years, we'll be able to do 15,000 only. So if you look at the microfinance, it has the ability to really scale up. But when we are doing intensive business entrepreneurship development work, it's A, very expensive, B, time-consuming, and C, it you can't really achieve the numbers in that way. So So we are hoping that these 15,000 businesses will actually grow to the SME level, but technically they won't do it naturally.
But I think also, Roshana, we have to be aware that in order to do that jump to the from having a small business that will allow them to have the income and to improve the business and whatever, to jump to the other level, there are constraints. They have to take care of their kids. They have to cook. They have to be at home. So is it possible to push the bar for them further? Do they want? Yeah. I think it's something that we have to be realize, no? Because to have this burden of this overload of responsibilities is very, it's very, very difficult. So
self-selection is important. Mm-hmm. That's what
if they want. So,
yeah. At max, it's 10% of the population that would be entrepreneurial, exactly. That builds a business.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well.
Permanent tiny business.
Okay,
we
okay.
Have a
here that we have.
We have a question here. Back here. So we only have time for two more questions.
Voilà, merci. Moi, je vais
thank you.
Je vais me parler en français.
I will speak in French.
Pour partager une expérience et puis pour poser une question.
To share an experience and to ask a question.
Alors, en Afrique de l'Ouest, je crois que madame l'a dit.
In West Africa.
Il y a beaucoup de travail qui a été fait pour l'autonomisation des femmes.
A lot of work has been done for
partager une
giving
expérience
autonomy to women.
De mon institution dans le monde rural.
So I'd like to share an experience of my institution in the rural world.
Qui après un constat a pu faire un diagnostic genre.
Which after noticing has been able to do a diagnostic
bon, qui a révélé en fait que l'essentiel de du sociétariat des membership effectivement c'est des femmes
which revealed that most of the
également c'est des femmes
most of the persons who took credits were mostly women.
Alors à un moment donné pour une institution socialement responsable donc il faut véritablement s'orienter dans ça.
So at one point noticing this we have to shift to this alors, focusing on women.
La contrainte, c'est que généralement, peu de femmes également sont dans les centres de décision au niveau de l'institution.
Unfortunately, women are not often part of the decision making.
Au niveau de l'institution, sont à des niveaux opérationnels.
Yes,
ça c'est un problème.
Most of the time, they are at operational level.
Et
so
à mon avis,
at the
c'est là
level.
En fait où il faut mettre le plus de paquet.
So that's where we should
renforcer les capacités
and put our strength on.
Pour les outiller pour ça.
To use them for that.
Alors, mon conseil et mon avis également, c'est que, bon, dans le contexte de l'Afrique de l'Ouest, j'ai comme l'impression.
My advice is that for in the West African context, I have the impression that.
Des combats étaient plus centrés sur les combats politiques.
Most of the fight were focused on political fights.
Il y a eu la parité, il y a les lois à l'Assemblée nationale, etc. Mais pour le secteur privé.
But for private sector.
Ce qui développe la réalité sociale, ce qui améliore en fait la réalité sociale.
Well,
des
what improved social reality? There was not many actions in that area.
Alors moi je pense que il faudrait que les organisations, etc. puissent adresser.
Our organization should be able to address.
Et qu'il y ait un impact politique, par
so
exemple,
that a impact.
Pour faire du crédit avec les femmes, on peut faire du crédit, mais les femmes n'ont pas assez de patrimoine.
Yeah, so
c'est l'accès à la terre.
Si we women don't have access to so many.
L'accès à la terre.
Yeah, they don't have access to
dans le
the
monde rural, c'est un grand problème.
Yeah, to ground.
Malgré tout le travail des femmes, ils n'ont pas pu peut-être voilà améliorer de façon significative ces aspects.
Because of that, they were not able to improve this significantly.
Alors moi, ma question c'est qu'est-ce qu'il faut faire aujourd'hui? Est-ce qu'il y a des institutions qui s'adressent à ça directement?
My question is
travailler même avec ces institutions. C'est vrai comme l'a dit Madame Ndiaye, il y a des institutions qui sont spécialisées, mais il y a d'autres institutions qui socialement aujourd'hui sentent leurs responsabilités. Pour travailler sur la question genre.
Can we ask some institutions, and are there some institutions out
Thank
there
you.
To which we can ask help from? Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
I think I will respond to him in French to make it very quick and come back to English.
Sure.
en fait, c'est vrai ce que vous avez dit, mais je pense qu'au Sénégal, le problème, ça a été qu'à un moment donné, on a reçu presque comme un coup de massue. Le Sénégal était en avance sur beaucoup de choses avant les années 94. 94, nous avons organisé la première réunion africaine des femmes avant Beijing. C'est la plateforme de l'Afrique qui a fait Beijing. C'est celle-là qui a été adoptée à Beijing. On n'a rien ajouté sur la plateforme africaine. Moi, j'étais dans le comité international. Women World Banking, nous avons organisé le Credit Corner à Beijing. Donc tout ça, c'était des acquis que nous avons perdus parce que les politiciens sont venus occuper l'espace. Et nous, développeurs, nous n'avons pas ce temps-là à passer notre temps à parler. Et donc on a laissé faire, mais on a eu peut-être tort. Il faudrait qu'on reprenne les choses en main. Mais à l'époque, nous avions un partenariat et c'est de ça qu'il s'agit aujourd'hui. Il faut redévelopper ce partenariat-là pour qu'on puisse avoir ce lien. I was just saying that in case of Africa, West Africa, we did a lot. And I remember that prior to Beijing conference, we had a lot of partnership alliances around the globe. And I was member of the International Committee for Beijing. And with Women World Banking and UNIFEM, we decided to organize a credit corner. At that time, it was for Sewa Bank, my organization, FDA, Women World Banking, etc. And it's from this credit corner, we had a lot of recommendations and decision was taken. And I think even the microcredit summit is part of that, is coming from there. But in countries like Senegal, after Beijing, we lost a little bit this partnership between all these institutions. We start working alone, and this is the big problem. In our countries, individual countries, politicians take over things. They start talking loudly, using our recommendations for political reasons and not for the development reasons. So we step out. Development people step out, and this is something we have to rectify. And I hope that this summit will be the occasion to start again this partnership for development. Absolutely. Thank you.
This is going to be our last question. We're going to translate.
Merci. Je vais parler en français. Donc moi, je reviens donc pour donner l'exemple de notre institution.
To give an example, qui est Liam Pamekas
au Sénégal,
which is in Senegal,
où depuis sa naissance en 95,
since 1995,
on avait développé donc une politique de crédit,
we have developed credit
qui n'avait pas pris en compte donc la préoccupation des femmes
which
dès
did
le
not
départ.
Take into consideration the case of women.
Et lorsqu'on s'était rendu compte de ce problème,
when we realized
nous avons essayé de nous corriger en mettant en place un programme d'accès des femmes sénégalaises aux services financiers.
We corrected this problem by forming something for the Senegalese women.
Et ce programme donc a fait en sorte que présentement c'est le produit phare du réseau Pamekas.
For this this was a program that is now called Pamekas.
Parce que 54% de son secrétariat actuel sont des femmes.
54% of stakeholders are women.
Nous avons développé des produits adaptés à leurs besoins.
Developing products that are adapted to their needs.
Mais ces produits sont toujours remis en cause parce qu'il y a une évolution très 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 importante donc des besoins des femmes au Sénégal. Il faut chaque fois adapter les produits en fonction des besoins des femmes et je trouve que c'est un aspect très important qu'il faut intégrer.
And these products are always need to be developed or to evolve because there's always a changing needs for as far as the women are concerned. And so this is our emphasis to develop the products as adaptable to the needs.
Mais je pose un problème. Mes inquiétudes présentement.
My present concerns right now.
Nous avons au niveau du réseau notre première présidente de conseil d'administration était une femme.
Our first board director, president of the board is a femme, a woman.
Presque 60% donc des présidents des agences, des caisses que nous avons créées étaient des femmes.
Almost 60% of our branch directors are women.
Mais présentement, on n'a qu'une seule femme.
Right now, we only have one woman.
Président de conseil d'administration.
Who is a president of the board.
C'est un problème
this is my
résoudre.
Concern, which is my problem that needs to be solved.
Pourquoi?
Who creates our board? I don't understand.
Parce que donc les hommes, lorsque l'institution donc est devenue très grande, les hommes ont poussé les femmes et ils ont pris la place des femmes.
So how did this come about? It's because when the institution became bigger and bigger, the men came over to take
et
over.
Et c'est pourquoi donc moi je pense women. Le problème c'est les instances de prise de décision.
I think it's the making of decision that is most important.
On peut pas représenter plus de 60% du sociétariat et au niveau des instances de prise de décision, donc n'occupez pas la place qu'il faut.
We cannot be 60% holding interest and have very little decision-making powers.
Présentement, donc il y a un projet, genre, donc dont je suis la responsable au niveau de la direction du réseau que je pilote actuellement pour faire pousser les femmes à revenir aux instances de prise de décision.
We have now a present initiative ongoing of which I am the head or leader, and then we are pushing for more decision-making powers for the women.
D'où le problème de la capacitation des femmes.
Which is
il faut régler ce problème parce que plus les réseaux deviennent grands, plus donc la formation devient importante pour diriger certaines instances.
Yes, for women empowerment, the bigger the institution is becoming, the greater it is important, the greater importance it is to give formation training to women.
Thank you so much. Sorry about that. I didn't want to cut you off. We're just running back on late on time. Can I just get some last few comments on her question and on the entire panel?
So I think she just made a comment. She did not ask a question. But my last comment will be that this summit is an opportunity for all of us to build new alliances to fight against all these problems we was raising since this morning. We did it before, we succeed, but somewhere we step out. I don't know why, but I think we need to think about how to do it again, because we are facing new problems, new challenges are coming in. If you look at this gender problem, so we need to look at how we can make these alliances, and through continents, through with countries, and exchange our experiences. That's what we do in INAFI. INAFI is a network, global network, as I said, with members from Asia, Latin America, and Africa, and the objective was to exchange our experiences, to learn from each other, and also to lobby and mainstream different questions like gender question, but also migration and development, many other questions like that. So thank you for your participation also.
Sure, just in closing, I think I would just say, I think we need to ask ourselves some hard questions as an industry. You know, we say we're focused on women, but I think we really need to dig deeper. I think it's about research. I think it's about data. Yeah. I think we need to do all these things to ensure that we're really representing ourselves as a women-focused industry, both at the staff and management level, and then also at the client level.
I think what I would like to, the key takeaway I'd like to leave you with is partnerships. It's partnerships with clients and their families. You can't do it in isolation. It's partnership with men who work with you in your institutions, and it's partnership with your stakeholders. That's one. And the second is back it by evidence. That's what I learned. The best way to convince people is to give them the data. And then to turn that data into actionable items. That's really how we've worked at Kashf. We've been a research-oriented organization. We listen, we learn, we grow, and we innovate on the basis of what our client is saying. And we also listen to our staff at the same time. So if you have those parameters, you can't go wrong. I promise you. So that's what I'd like to say.
And for closing, I think it's very important to remember that we have the commitment to reach the poorest of the poor. And I can assure that if we do the correct partnerships to reach the poorest of the poor, and we have that commitment, when women are going to be back on stage, I can promise you.
Thank you so much. Lunch is in the mezzanine reception hall.